Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
Well, when I was young, hello and welcome to Real Recovery. Bill, George, Ted on the board, we're so glad you're with us tonight. We're going to have a wonderful discussion tonight, George, about what's coming up next Tuesday and Wednesday, of course, which is Christmas. And that's going to create a lot of opportunities for people to have lots of parties and lots of time to be celebrating. And, of course, with celebrating comes the possibility of being in old environments where maybe they were where you used alcohol and drugs, and this could be a trigger.
It could be. Aren't you going to use your microscope wine? You always do that holidays.
What's my magnifying glass?
Glass. Yeah,
everything seems bigger.
I don't listen.
I wished you would listen. But the whole, you know, the whole idea that your life your life under a magnifying glass, and you know everything seems bigger or out of proportion because it's the holidays, and you're always evaluating where am I in life, and are things going well or are things not going well.
Absolutely,
everything looks bigger.
It does, and problems look bigger. It's a tough time of the year for a lot of us that are in recovery, and it's a tough time for a lot of people that aren't in recovery from alcoholism or drug addiction. So we need a plan before we go in, and we always talk about a step on this show. And step one is we admitted we were powerless over drugs, alcohol, and our life's unmanageable. I got to tell you, for me, going into the holidays can be very unmanageable. And let's acknowledge that before we go, Bill, that things might come up. Now, I don't want to have, and my mentor, Denny, always said, I'm not allowed to have a conversation with anybody unless they're in the room with me. And what that's about is we're not allowed to have conversations imaginary about what we're going to say.
Okay.
I think we go to the Moody Blues on that, letters I've written, never meaning to send. It's never good for me when I do these imaginary confrontations in my head. However, in recovery, I want to be able to plan an exit if I need to.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, excuse me, when I first got sober, I would drive everywhere I went in case I needed to leave. Actually, I still do that now. But I also want to walk in with a drink in my hand of water. That would eliminate for me that, do you want something to drink? No, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need to plan what you're going to do when somebody offers you a drink. I want to remember that I am an addict in recovery, an alcoholic. I want to pray for sobriety before I go. I also want to pray, and I heard this on the Faith Radio Network this week on your show with Dr. Glenn Pickering, about having my best self show up.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, my best self is not George. It's Jesus, you know, helping me to do it. Pray for the ability to stay sober in the situation. First of all, be very aware that you could mess this up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true wisdom there. When I realize, you know, left to my own devices, I'm drunk.
All right, George, let's talk about some of the stressors that show up around the holiday season.
Like you?
Yeah, well, like you.
Oh, I'm so easy to get along with. I don't know how you could say that.
You know, you can be in a situation where maybe you have some financial strain. And that is a stressor.
Sure.
Especially around the holiday season. Maybe you've got some emotional struggle as a result of interactions you've had with family or friends that you may have drank with, or those who have caused you in the past to feel anger or desperation, anxiety, all that. And maybe you've got a family conflict that you know you're going to be facing again. And that can be a stressor. All right.
There's a lot of things that can happen. And I go back to Bill, and it's a great question. I need a plan here.
Mm.
What is my goal? Let's start that. Well, I want to go and have a good time, but I want to make sure I'm sober. I want to make sure I don't say anything that I'm going to regret later. And I want to have a little plan that I'm not going to talk about certain topics. It's always good to avoid the political conversations. And just really go and focus on going, okay, I can do anything for a day. I care about a lot of these people. I want to be sober and be cordial and, you know, pray about it and have a strategy. And for me, that is walking in with a bottle of water in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being very aware that there might be some alcohol there. that I don't drink, and I figured this out in my head beforehand, and that way I work my plan, and I'm not just going off the seat of my pants and saying, okay, here's I'm going to be reactive. I got a plan.
Mm-hmm. So if you show up late and leave early, is anyone disappointed?
I always do that, and so do you. And we don't care if they're disappointed or not.
Right.
I mean, I don't think anybody's disappointed. I'm not there. Come on.
Right, right. So what about some of the other items that you can encounter at parties, like, you know, cookies or treats that have alcohol in them? I know you're very aware of that, George, and I am proud that you are come right out and ask. You know,
I do. In fact, that came up today. I ordered a salad, and I was looking at the menu. And it had tequila something dressing.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked about that, and they weren't sure. So I just said, I don't need any dressing. I'm a little over paranoid on it. But I want to remember that I never thought I would get sober. And this can kill me. If I have a drink, that can kill me because we're not going to be stopping. And it's not about living in fear. It's living in reverence. It's really living in the truth, Bill, that apart from God, I'm not sober. And so I really say pray up before you go somewhere. Say a little prayer before you get out of the car. Lord, help me to get through this sober. Guard my tongue. Guard my heart. Help me to be a loving, kind person in this.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the self-care that you could recommend prior to going to a party? I mean, obviously a good night's sleep, maybe a nice workout. I mean, just your normal routine so you don't find yourself in a position where you're a little out of sorts.
Exactly, Bill, and those things are all important to an ongoing recovery. I guess the one thing we don't talk enough about, and I've heard a lot of shows on this, and it's a great topic, you don't have to go either. And I want to emphasize, if this is going to be a real threat to your recovery, you can take a pass on this. I've worked with a lot of clients over the years that would get into situations that beforehand their gut was telling them might be too tough, and then they went and they used. And I'm not Superman. I don't need to test my recovery. And if I honestly pray about it and feel, gosh, maybe it's the Holy Spirit, Bill, telling me not to go, you don't have to go. Makes sense to you?
Total sense. And it's your life. It's your sobriety. It's your recovery. It's your future. You get to do whatever you want. Right.
Well, that's the way I've always done it.
Well, I know, but I mean, you can be in a situation where they say, "All right, we want to toast this person that's just graduated from Harvard. So let's all get a little glass of champagne. We're going to toast this person." Oh, come on, George, just toast. And you go, "No, I'm not doing that." I mean, you can hold up a glass of water, but I mean, you don't want to be forced into a situation where you go, "I don't like holding in my hand this glass of alcohol."
Sure, and It can be a situation that just might not be right for you if you're early in recovery or you just don't feel comfortable about it. I try to honor what I believe are the Spirit's convictions, Bill. And if I get a bad feeling in my stomach, whether it's working with a client that I feel is scary, it could be violent, I trust my gut. And this is not a command performance if it's really hard for you to do. But the other thing is, for a couple hours, I should be able to do just about anything. If, as you said, I'm healthy, I'm getting mm-hmm. my rest, my prayer life, and being in the Word. But also, if you have a problem, talk to your mentor. This is where it's real important to have a community in our recovery that I can bounce things off of.
Mm-hmm. So is it your mentor, or is it maybe another a sober alcoholic that can be on call to help you check in with during an event?
Sure.
If you're feeling like you need some additional support?
You should have somebody, Bill, that you have access to 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for the guys I work with, that's true. And I know for my mentor, Denny, that is true also. That, but you should be checking in with these people along the way. We don't just have these people as our 911 call, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking, you and I are friends. We talk about stuff all the time. This is an ongoing relationship with Christ, and then the people that have God in them but have flesh on them that I can go to and say, "Hey, Bill, what do you think about this? I have this coming up. I'm going here this weekend for a Christmas party. Here's my thinking. What do you think? You need that kind of, and you need people to go, hey, you know, you think that's really a good idea for you? And you need to be open and listen to what they say. As many people we can bring into our recovery, the stronger it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Is there wisdom, George, in when you arrive at a house that you might be celebrating a party at, is to simply say to the host, please don't offer me anything that has alcohol in it. I mean, here, have a rum cake. Rum cake, you know, it's got rum in it.
Yeah, but it's a cake, you know. You know, unless you want to go get about five of those cakes, don't give me any. I always...
Or is that a little overkill?
No, I think the people in my group, my family, they all know I'm in recovery, and they did at the beginning. And, you know, there's a way of being accountable and responsible, and you have to judge that every situation. But I always like to have somebody with me, my wife or whatever, who knows I'm in recovery, and we're kind of walking together in this. I think when people get into trouble is when they get isolated and alone. I'm the only person at the table who's not drinking. That can be tough. So you need to take somebody with you, too, I think, Bill, as a companion and support. And your family, if they're not for your recovery, gosh, I would say, hey, maybe I'll see you next year.
Yeah, yeah. So make sure you have an escape plan. Make sure you are not stuck at a party that you need to get away from.
Yeah, and I really think that if it's going to be everybody there is going to get liquored up, so to speak, I'm going to pass on the deal. And you should be all right most of the deal. I don't remember too many family occasions that got out of hand from drinking. I remember a few that got out of hand because of arguments. And I have the right to not participate in that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, think about it before you go. Go in with a plan. Pray up about it. And you should be just fine and have a great, great holiday celebration.
Let's go to break, George. When we come back, we've got a couple of guests that are going to be joining the show that are going to share their strength, their experience, and their strategy for getting through the holidays and making sure that they do the right thing.
Love it.
I love it, too. We'll take a short break. You listen to Real Recovery. Be back in a minute.
Our Savior was born upon this day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space.
All right, Real Recovery is back. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and just across the way, George P. Fraser. I don't know if many of you know this. George in high school was on the water polo team. He was the pool cleaner. It was a great job.
It worked, and I lettered.
They gave you a letter for that?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Little sponge thing near the letter.
Little squeegee?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little squeegee right on the letter?
Yeah.
That's cool. I like that.
Thanks for remembering that.
Yeah, I do, because I care.
I was kind of somebody in high school. You know, a lot of people wanted to be me, and I was me. And it worked.
Yeah. Well, we're on a discussion tonight about just getting ready for the holidays and being prepared and making sure that you are taking precautions. And here joining us on the program is Janet A., and she is now, I think, Janet, first of all, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
And I want to say December is a sobriety anniversary for you. Do I have that right?
My sobriety birthday is May 20th of 2013.
So oh, you were close. I was pretty close.
You were close,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, so there you go.
So I just passed 6.5 years.
Oh, congratulations. So when the holidays come around, and there's all kinds of stress that's associated with the holidays, what do you do to make sure you are as prepared as you can be to deal with them?
Let's see. One of the things I do just in general in life is make sure the people around me know. And that was something I was not comfortable with when I first got sober. To me, I was still dealing with absolutely believing myself that I was an alcoholic. And so once I settled into that and realized this is okay, this is part of who I am and it's become part of my new identity, I felt comfortable sharing it with obviously family, but then even with coworkers. And so I make sure that there's somebody with me when I go to an event who knows that I'm a non-drinker, so that if I go to the office holiday party and drinks are being passed around, I'm not tempted because I know somebody's there with their eye on me. And honestly, over the years, that temptation has gotten less and less, so it's become easier. But I still make sure at every event where there's alcohol that there's somebody there that knows that that's not something that's a part of my life.
That's wonderful. George was saying in the opening part of the show that he will walk into an event holding something to drink, bottle of water or some beverage of some kind that he's already predetermined is going to be in his hand. So nobody's saying, can I get you something? And the temptation is instantly removed. What do you think about that little piece of wisdom?
That's great. I even carry things in my car so I can do the same thing. Either walk in with a can of soda or a bottle of water just so I look like I'm set. I'm taken care of. No need to worry about me.
I love this. One of the things that you said is you've got your regular routine and you have somebody that knows that you're in recovery. It's always interesting to me that once we get into recovery, nobody's supposed to know we're in recovery, but most people who knew us before knew we had a real problem with drinking. That's always ironic to me.
It is.
I'm anonymous now when everybody knew it before, but you kind of have to drive some stakes, and you don't get the length of sobriety you have unless you're doing some things right. And do you think, I've found in my life that there's going to come a time when I want to drink again, but I don't know when it's coming. So I got to make sure I've got my sober bank account built up. Is that true for you too?
Yes, absolutely. I've been around this program long enough, and even when I was new to it, you always hear, it never goes away. And you hear the stories of people who have 20, 30 years, step out one day and decide, hey, I can try and handle this. And it just wallops them. So I never have any illusion that, hey, this is still with me. I don't want to go out and experiment to see, am I different? Can I handle it now? It's something that I'm of a healthy fear regarding. And that's based on continuing to be connected to people in the program, to keep up on reading, going to meetings, and just that reminder that this is how my body, my brain, my soul are wired, and it's just not going to be different if I try it again. So I do have a healthy fear.
I love that. One of the classic sayings around recovery is, I have alcoholism, not alcoholism. And I always love that.
Exactly.
Because I started thinking, I'm okay. I'm not okay. That's why I'm in recovery, and that's why I have a relationship with Jesus, right? Because I have some issues.
Exactly.
And Janet,
I have my grounding. I have my balance,
yeah,
as I call it.
I love that.
Janet, we were also talking in the first half about certain food that can be laced with alcohol. And how do you prepare to make sure that you don't eat a rum ball or two and all of a sudden feel like, ooh, okay, that taste I just had, I like.
Yes, and tastes and smells, I'm really sensitive to that. I was at a convention for work, and I went out to dinner with some friends, and it was one of these big shots impressing everybody at the company, and I think there were 14 of us, and I think they all drank 20 bottles of wine by the end of the night, but that's kind of what their focus was. My focus was on getting through a dinner where I asked the waiter about the salad dressing. I wanted to know, is there alcohol in the salad dressing? And I just asked blatantly. And finally, the person around me was like, what's the deal? And I said, oh, I'm an alcoholic. And they're like, well, that's not going to get you drunk. And I said, no, I just don't want the taste in my mouth.
Right.
It could trigger me to want to drink. And they said they were baffled by this. They were actually just guzzling their wine and asking me more questions about it. And just making sure anything in the sauce and the meat. So like I said, the salad dressings, the side dishes, even especially the desserts too. There's a lot of liqueurs put into desserts. So I just kind of became a running joke. And I was okay with that. I was just like, my taste buds, it'll set me off. I just don't want to. It'd be like if you were allergic to strawberries and you wanted to make sure there are no strawberries or no nuts. You know, it's just not going to work with my body. So, and again, this was not something I would have been comfortable with early in sobriety. I probably just would not have gone, which would have been probably the smart choice for me early in sobriety. But I'm prepared to be able to sit down and ask a waiter or waitress, what's in this? Well, you know, making sure that it's going to be okay with me.
And that just happened to George today at lunch. He had some, was it?
Tequila lime salad dressing.
And he got very specific with the waiter, ended up not taking any chances and not having salad dressing on his salad.
You know,
yeah, there was one time I had a cookie that tasted like amaretto, and it didn't have any alcohol in it, but I just didn't like the taste. And I just didn't eat it. I didn't want to smell it. I threw them away.
You know, I always get the internal voice in my head going, are you this messed up, George? And the answer I give is, yes, I am. And that healthy fear for me, I'm sure I would be fine having the tequila lime salad. Now, and if I go back there for dinner tonight, you know, we got a problem. But I don't know where this stops, you know, where it's okay for me. But I want to be constantly vigilant. And I loved how you said it, a healthy fear. And I want to remember who I am, Bill. I'm an alcoholic. I'm in recovery, but people go back every day. And if you hang around the accountability groups, you see that. So we want to have a healthy respect for that. I loved what you've said so far.
Yeah. And Janet, you're working with other people, aren't you? You're working with women.
Yes. I sponsor two women right now.
Okay. And are they feeling a little of nervousness around the holidays, or have they already kind of worked through that?
Well, both. Okay. The first 2 years of sobriety were really difficult for them. And we did exactly what you're talking about today, is how do you protect yourself? How do you set it up ahead of time so you don't face those temptations on the spot, have to make a decision? So we always talked about, you know, drive yourself if you're going to an event. That way you can walk in with a drink, have an escape route. You know, you're not depending on somebody for a ride. We talked about with family, you know, do they know? Are you comfortable talking about it with them? If they don't know, you know, there's all sorts of ways you can come up with a reason that you're not drinking, if that's something that you were known for in the past. I've talked with them and gone through the plan, gone through what are the key trouble spots, what are the hot button things that make you want to drink. So that at least they've verbalized and thought through it on their own.
Like
how am I going to handle that?
Yeah, I like that too. Well, Janet, thank you so much for coming on the show, and a very Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Ah, to you too, Bill.
Yeah.
And good to talk to you, George.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Thank you for validating George.
Yeah, I was kind of feeling hurt there, and that's one of my
triggers.
He's
always seeking validation. Yeah. That's his problem. All right. We'll take a little break, and we'll be right back with lots more. Welcome back to Real Recovery. No hurry to stop that song. That's a good one. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and just across the way, George P. Fraser. And George has said one thing that I've never said, and it's these words. So I said to my cellmate, never happened to me, George.
You know, I never had a cellmate. Edina guys get
you got single
rooms. Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
It was wasn't up to my standards, but
And you were able to negotiate that once you were behind bars.
Didn't like a lot of the neighbors either. Can I share that?
No, I get that. I get that. So interesting discussion. It was great talking to Janet, and now it'd be kind of nice to talk on the other side, someone who is supporting somebody in addiction. You know, who has to be the helpmate in times of temptation and difficulty. And that's my friend Patrick. He's on the line. Patrick, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. And George, by the way, it is true what Bill said. about having never said, so I said to my cellmate, because when we were cellmates, he never spoke to me once. Not once.
I never did. I never said anything to him.
But yeah, but you're still friends years later, and that's a nice Christmas story.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, we're excited about Christmas, and, you know, there's lots of celebrations and parties and festivities, and people are around lots of alcohol, food that's been laced with alcohol. And for a person that wants to cut loose, or maybe it triggers old memories because you're in environments where we used to have parties here and we used to drink, it can be a lot of triggers that go on and a lot of temptation. And people who is supporting someone who suffers from alcohol needs to be on guard, doing their best.
Yeah. In fact, I was at a Christmas party the other day, and I think just about everybody invited brought some sort of liquor product, which I found so interesting. They brought it as a gift. You know, it had the bow on it, and then they just consumed it themselves. But, you know, I guess that's how these drinking Christmas parties work. It's when you're on this side of it, you see so much of it that you go, how did I not notice all this before?
Right. Right. When Janet got sober, you know, the first couple Christmases, were you really worried about her? Were you watching her? Were you scared?
Maybe a little bit scared. I wasn't watching her because I had already done that battle in the years that we struggled to get through all this stuff. And I got to the point where I said, you know, I can't lock up the world. I can't watch her 24 hours a day. And she's so stinking clever that no matter what I do, she'd find a workaround.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you really get to a point where you are going to have to trust that either the program's working or it's not. You're going to know if they're not following. You're going to know. I mean, there was a nice validation, you know, when she was doing step four and she's saying, okay, you know, all those times you said, I think you've been drinking and you were right. And yes, you were right. I did have some hidden here and hidden here and hidden here. And that type of honesty was nice because you say, okay, A, I wasn't crazy. B, it meant that my radar for when she was using was finely tuned. And I realized, well, I'll notice it again. I have to relax. I can't put that extra pressure on her that I'm just Mr., you know, edgy all the time either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have faith that she really means it. You almost just have to move forward in that regard. Maybe it's a blind faith, but I think you have to do it.
Did you ever go to any friends and family groups?
I did, yes. And I went to a few with her father. And I don't know if I've told you guys this story before, but we had gone to some of the Al-Anon meetings. And I will go on the record and say the AA meeting type things are actually much more enjoyable than the Al-Anon ones because the people at AA are getting better. And a lot of the people at Al-Anon are saying, I don't know what to do. I don't know if this person, this significant person in my life is going to get better. And it's nice to see in a room of people that have struggled with this problem, the ones getting better. It's so uplifting to see that. So I tended to enjoy the AA meetings, and I would always go to support her on anniversaries.
And she's had going on 6.5 years of sobriety, and there is a great celebration there, but I think she'd be quick to admit that it's nothing that is behind her. That's something that she'll always have to pay attention to, which is really wise.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not 6.5 years till tomorrow, so let's not get ahead of ourselves here.
Right.
But, and joking aside, that's exactly how she approaches it, which, of course, you know, I think I heard you guys talking about having some things in, you know, in the bank. And when you the longer you are sober, I believe, just as an observer, you know, the less you are willing to risk it. You're going, oh, my gosh, do I really want to throw away 6.5 years of, you know, staying clean today, you know, by taking a chance or, you know, just seeing if I can do one. So I get more comfortable the more time she has because I know that she's very risk averse that way. It's like, oh, I don't want to throw all this away. I don't want to start all over again.
You know,
you do. You start. It's like if you saved money for 20 years, it'd be like blowing all of it and having to start at zero. It's not blowing some of it. You blow all of it, and then you start at zero.
I think you bring up a really good point. I'm a big fan of knowing what your dry date is, just for at the very least, for the simple reason when we're thinking about, should I drink or not? I want to know what I'm playing for, and you just really laid that out nicely. Do you really want to throw away what time you have? If you have a revolving dry date, like I did for a while, it's not a big deal. You can start again tomorrow. And I think on a lot of this, guys, we had talked with Janet on the first part, Bill, before Patrick came on. We want to be level-headed and not be hysterical about this, but we want to be in reality. I don't want to go back to magical thinking that I don't need a program and a plan to get through this. I don't want to be hysterical on it and be afraid to do everything, but I want to pray to God to give me the insight of what I should do and follow through with that program and have that available to my spouse and people in my recovery network. So I want to be level-headed about it.
Yeah, and why take the risk? What if you're wrong? You know, my brother had a problem with drugs for years, and he would say to me, you know, if you never try some of these things, you can't like them, and that greatly increases your chances of not getting hooked on them. And he says, would you ever really want to take the risk? What if you're one of those people that once you start, you can't stop? And I know Janet looks at her sobriety that way. It's like, you know, what if, you know, I did something like that? And it isn't just a one-day thing. It isn't just a one-day off the wagon. It's the rest of my life till a very unsavory ending. What if it's the last time? Why? You know, I think if you make the cost of doing it so high that a reasonable person would say, you know, it's just not worth it. I think, you know, alcoholics often get into trouble with saying, oh, what's the big deal? And I think if you have an approach of it's a big deal, a really big deal, because this could be the end of your life and it could destroy everything, that's quite the motivator.
Now, I look at it when I go into some place and there's a bar and there's alcohol there and it looks very nice up on the glass shelf and, you know, the music's playing and the bright lights. You realize that could kill you. And it's not a hysterical thing, but this is what I needed to do to finally get sober. I remember after the last time I went to rehab the third time, and I on graduation, I thought, you know, I've got this down. I will never drink again. And a month later, I was doing lines at my house going, I remember when I made it a month, not a lifetime. I don't have a lot of confidence in my ability to say no to sinful behaviors that I can find attractive if I'm not walking with the Lord. But I do know that I want to do God's will, and I don't want to, you know, ever forget how easy it is to go back to our old ways. And I also believe we don't talk about this a lot. There is a Satan involved here that's a lot craftier than I am.
Yeah, he certainly is crafty, but he has no new tricks. The old ones are very effective. And we unfortunately seem to be willing participants. You know, I have a thing that I do when people are telling stories. Whenever you are starting to hear a story where people are relating an event, something that happened, it begins with, well, we were so drunk, I very often interrupt them and say, let me finish. You did something really stupid. And gosh, I'm 100% correct every single time. It's very rare that somebody says, you know, we got so drunk, and then I bought Apple stock. Unbelievable. Just I don't know what happened. And then I won the lottery, and then I got a perfect 10 on the parallel bars. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stories always have a similar ending. And it's so funny when somebody's relating a story of when they were intoxicated or high, they don't realize that we know what's coming. You did something really dumb, and for some reason you're trying to make that okay. You're trying to laugh it off as if, hey, haven't we all done that kind of stuff? And, you know, you want to put your hand up and say, well, actually, I know. And I think that, you know, once you know that those are the kind of outcomes, that maybe it's just best to avoid the instigator.
I love that. One of the things that I see in myself and guys I work with, Patrick, is when people get to the point and they go, you know, I'm not going to tell those stories anymore because they aren't funny. I'm really embarrassed about that. And I got to tell you, that took me a few years into recovery. You know, we think we're exciting guys that just these unique things happen to us. And when you sober up, you realize the reason they happened to you, because you were hanging around people that were doing what you were doing, and it's not normal, and it's not funny, it's sinful. But, you know, Bill, I admire you, and Patrick, I'm sure you're the same way, that you guys never do any jokes that honor sin. Well, I've taken that since I've known you, Bill, and put that into my recovery talks. And, you know, working with guys, I don't want to honor anything I did, even though it might be funny to some people when I was using, because at the bottom line is it's not funny. Sin is not funny.
Yeah. We need to take a little break. Hey, Patrick, can you stick around for a little bit longer?
Sure. I'm yours.
Okay.
So you
awesome. Awesome. You are listening to Real Recovery, a show that is raw and unfiltered, except for the parts we heavily redacted. We'll take a short break and be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Here's a quote, George, from Salvador Dali. He said, have no fear of perfection. You'll never reach it.
Love it.
That's it's a good one, isn't it? I think we always try to, we have high expectations, which is good, but we also can find ourselves in situations where we can't do anything on our own. We, apart from Christ, we can do nothing. So let's lean into him. There, I just used that expression.
John 15:5.
Yeah.
You can bathe it in prayer, too, and pray for travel mercies, as long as we're at it.
You are bugging me big time tonight.
I love it. That makes my whole day.
Yeah? Well, go ahead and cough.
Sorry.
That's all right.
I think we were talking on the break. I don't want to get everybody super paranoid about this, but I want you to be concerned enough to have it on your radar. I think a lot of times, guys, where I get in trouble, I figure I got this. And it's no longer a concern of mine. Staying sober will always be a primary concern. I pray for it before I get out of bed every day. And I think as long as I think about it, I will stay sober. I think where we get into trouble is where we don't think about it.
Mm-hmm. We're joined on the studio line by Patrick. And Patrick is has a lot of experience supporting someone who has gone through alcohol and now is in recovery. And Patrick, as I was thinking, George was saying, are we overreacting? And I would say no, and I would guess you might say no, too.
I would say absolutely not. You know, I think when you take things a little bit too lightly, that's where you make the mistakes. You know, that's the hey, y'all, watch this kind of attitude.
Sounds like you've said that before.
He has.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah. But it's true. You know, if... and I've worked in the bar business, and so I've known many an alcoholic, and I do owe quite a few car payments to them because they supported me for many years. But, you know, you'd see the braggadocio, like, look how much I can drink. And so, you know, when you if you don't take things seriously, I think you find yourself in that territory sooner rather than later. You might find it kind of surprising, like, wow, this is sort of an accomplishment, isn't it? I can put down a whole bottle. Mm. You know, and I would know these guys. I think, is that a bragging thing? I'm not sure that's a bragging thing. But I think that's part of the work of when you talk about Satan getting involved. He says, don't be ashamed, be proud. Be proud of the sin. Be proud of the things that are wrecking your life. It's going to be great. And you're willing to accept that lie because it fits the moment. It fits what you want to do at that moment. So I say, boy, that walking around with a little bit more fear and respect for the power of something like that is not a bad thing at all.
I really agree with what you said. When I was using, I was proud of the fact that I worked hard and I played hard and I was a little bit of an outlaw, and I thought that made me cool. So you're exactly on the money there. Want to make sure that what you think is cool is fitting into what God thinks is cool. And usually there's a big difference. Sounded like my dad tonight. I'm sorry. Huh?
You do sound like your dad.
A wee tad bit of difference, yes.
Yeah.
Wee tad. You know, I think I just saw something Scotch. So Scotch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm talking about, guys.
Never stops us either. Yeah.
Yeah. We just keep talking and talking and hope we say something.
Something clever.
Yeah, exactly.
Just anything.
Anything. So when you are in environments that are familiar, because family environments are year after year the same, is that a difficult situation for your wife to be in, or is it pretty controlled and they know the drill and they're respectful?
They know the drill, they're respectful, but, you know, for the most part, there's not a whole lot of, I mean, at family gatherings, you'd have to, unless somebody's hiding something somewhere, I never see anything. I think her family's just gone full into support mode of, well, we don't even need to have it around, which, of course, is pretty typical of somebody who's not an alcoholic. They can take it or leave it. So they're like, oh, well, we just won't have it. And it doesn't affect the event. I mean, I think it shows itself more at these especially corporate-type parties or, events where it's surprising, and I'm sure you've noticed this. Maybe you didn't notice it before, but you say, gosh, this event is just an excuse for people to drink. That's the only reason this thing is here. And so those, I don't want to say that they're harder. I think if you know that going in, that there are going to be people that are when I was a bartender, I was always amazed. I would have some regular guests that would be very moderate drinkers, for example. Maybe one, maybe two, and it'd be low-level stuff. And, you know, the next thing you know, the company's throwing a party, and, you know, the guy that would order a rum and Coke would come in and say, I'll have Cavassier and Coke, please. You know, he'd order, like, the most expensive liquor, and he'd have 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 of them. So those environments can be pretty toxic because some people who are normally a bit restrained can get out of control. And I think there's a danger, too, that I don't know if I've ever told you the story once where I was at an event for bartenders, and I don't drink. And they were stunned. They go, well, who ever heard of a bartender who didn't drink? I said, well, I've seen enough, you know. And I run to the restroom. I come back, and somebody had spiked my water with alcohol.
Like as a joke?
I go to grab my glass of water, and I'm stunned, and I'm angry, and I left. Somebody had given me a ride there. I said, take me out of here. I don't want to hang around with these people. And I go, well, that kind of stuff happens sometimes at these events. And so that's why you keep a watchful eye. It's weird. It's almost evil that some people would say, oh, that person over there doesn't drink. Well, it just put a little something in their drink.
Hmm.
You know, imagine having your sobriety ruined because somebody pulled a prank on you. So you do have to be vigilant. Very vigilant, I think. Does happen.
I think people can do that. They think it might be funny and it could be just tragic. I think the key here is to just have our eyes open and look at what we're doing. It's interesting to me. I was listening to you talk, and I was thinking, Patrick, the only people in my life that I encounter that drink, because I've been sober for a long time and most of my friends are sober Christians, are Christians who aren't in recovery. So the only time I really have to have my guard up when I'm around is Christians. Of course, Arnold, I've got my guard up around you a lot.
As you should.
But, you know, it's interesting because the attractive thing for me is a person that has, like, one glass of wine. You know, the drunk guy isn't somebody I want to emulate. And I have to have my guard up around that because there's no way I'm going to be doing one glass of wine. So it's interesting to me that I always want to have that on the forefront, you know, that it could happen.
And of course, those people do exist that you go, wow, that's amazing. You can have one drink one time a week and you don't have a problem and you know, great for them. But, you know, it is funny. My mother was not, I probably on one hand, the as a kid, the number of times that I'd see her have anything that would have any alcohol in it. It would be the very rare thing, you know, very rare. And then as she got older and older and older, you know, suddenly she's like, I really like wine. You know, I really like wine. And it was a glass of wine every night. And I was like, so my mother did not become a problem drinker. But you say, you know, your control over this thing could one day just go away if you're not paying attention. It could right. become, you know, what's the big deal? What's and there's enough people out there, and I've heard some people on the radio, prominent people, that say you should have at least one glass of wine a day. It's good for you. And for years, my wife would even defend that, say, this person says that. And I go, well, how do you know that person's not an alcoholic justifying their own consumption? You know, just because they say so doesn't make it right. I think, yeah, you always want to be pretty vigilant that, you know, when can something turn into a problem?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
things
we're...
can always turn into a problem. Anything can become excessive. What's the thing about moderation?
I don't know. I'm not strong on that.
Everything in moderation, which, by the way, I've been overdoing a bit of the moderation.
But then I want to ask, what are the properties in this glass of wine that's so beneficial, and can those properties be gotten somewhere else? I mean, sometimes you hear that just a handful of red grapes is the same equivalent health value as you would drinking a glass of wine. There's got to be another non-alcoholic way to do it.
Correct. And so then you say, what's the real attraction? Is it the buzz?
Right.
And if the buzz is the attraction, then, you know, physiologically speaking, doesn't the body eventually become immune to the one glass and need two, and then the two doesn't work and you need four? And eventually you say, well, look at my friends out here in the gutter. This is all I've got left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, granted, that's not going to happen to everybody, but I think be aware that you go, yeah, you know, what is your attraction to that glass of wine? Is it really the flavor, or is the flavor just disguising the true desire for the buzz?
Yeah. And Patrick, you've had experiences with your family where alcohol was involved and experiences where alcohol wasn't involved. Maybe you would just encourage listeners and just share the difference.
You mean in regards to, you know, bad things happening?
Well, I mean, there was a time when your wife was using alcohol over the Christmas holiday, and now the Christmases you have today are markedly different than the ones when she was using.
Yes. Well, and if we go back to my mother's 80th birthday celebration, which was a fiasco and horrifically embarrassing. You know, she's sneaking out to a bar, guzzling down 2-3 glasses at a time to be able to come back and be like, I'm just drinking water tonight, folks. And the speech is getting sloppy, and everybody kind of knows what's going on. And it was my mother's 80th birthday. It was a horrible night. And we were in Chicago, and we drove back to Des Moines, and stopping at rest stops every hour or two where, you know, she had to use the bathroom. And unbeknownst to me, there's a stash inside her purse to keep her going. And but I do remember, as we're nearing in to getting back to Des Moines, and she says, you know, you just I was upset, to put it mildly. She said, give me today. This is my last day.
Okay.
And that was the last
day.
Wow.
I think the embarrassment and the level of consumption and the complete surrender of, oh, my gosh, this thing owns me. It owns me.
Mm-hmm.
It calls the moves.
Yeah. Patrick,
you know, over to the rest area.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I so appreciate it, as George does too. George, that wraps up the big show. And also, George, say Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas to everyone, including you, Patrick.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks.
Yeah.
What about me,
thanks.
George?
And Bill.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you. Nice save at the end there, George.
And Ted.
Have a very Merry Christmas, and we will see you soon. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.